I heard you talk about the Talladega Nights and how that should have been a documentary, which was...
Well, you brought his house, haven't you? Well, Ricky Bobby's house.
You got to keep a good story rolling, so...
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Kevin Harvick's Happy Hour, presented by NASCAR on Fox. I've got Shane Van Gisbergen here in studio with us today, so thanks for coming.
And for
hopefully, I don't screw this up too bad, but surely we can make our way through it. You can listen to us here on Kevin Harvick's Happy Hour anywhere that you listen to your podcast, on YouTube or anywhere else that you want to listen. So, I guess the biggest thing that I want to ask you, Shane. It is so intriguing to me, everything that you've gone through in your racing career, and now you've ventured all the way over here to America in something that is just totally different than anything you've ever driven in your whole life. And we were talking a little bit before you got started, oval racing. That's something totally different than you've ever done. Did you ever do any of that in anything that you've ever driven before?
No, there's no ovals at all where we are. So yeah, it's pretty different. I've experienced, you know, three different types of tracks now, and every week's a massive challenge and learning curve, but that's what I'm here for, challenge myself and try some new things.
I guess as you went through the first couple of weeks, you went through what I would consider super speedway races. And I think you did a great job. Obviously, you've talked about, you know, the wrecks and things that you experienced at Daytona that you were able to keep going and running into things. And I always viewed things as a 50% chance of surviving. But I think that the biggest transition that you've probably experienced yet was probably Las Vegas. And I just happened to be there with you and doing the track walk. And I loved your first reaction because of the fact that when you walked out on the racetrack and you said, mate, these banks, they're much steeper than they looked in the simulator. And I think that if you hadn't experienced that in real life, you would just look at it and say, oh, it's just another racetrack. What were some of the biggest differences from Vegas? Because I think that's more unique than Daytona and Atlanta.
Yeah, just the speed, really. Like, it's the first time I've driven the Xfinity car with full power. So the first time you leave the pits, the thing wheel spins, which it hasn't done the last couple. And when you hook fourth down the back straight, like, it's, you're hooking up to turn three. It's pretty fast. And just how much finesse you need. Like, the car moves around so much more than I was expecting, so much more than what the sim shows me as well. So when you get in the banking, like, it's so quick the way you turn in, and when it compresses, the forces that you go through, and you obviously got downforce, but then the way the banking is pushing against the car, giving you grip, it's like, it's sensations I haven't felt before. And then when the thing sticks, you got to go quicker again, and then throw that in the race. You know, I had a pretty mixed practice. We didn't get much running with some tech issues. So in the race, I was just starting to figure it out before the engine let go. But yeah, it's crazy. I thought I was going quick. And then I think it was Justin Allgaier. He started at the back. He just went around me like I was standing still, you know, and I thought I was creeping up to it. But yeah, I got a lot to learn to just understand what's going on. It's so different.
So when you came to do this, Who were the people that, what did you start watching? Did you start studying on YouTube? Did you, I know that Marcus Ambrose has been a help, but did you study him? How did you study?
Yeah, just as much onboards as I could. That's what I did last year for the two races I did. The team were really good, sending me onboards, radio files, and just listening how the communication is, because that's quite different. Talking about loose and tight and wedge and stuff like that. You know, those are... this language I've never really used before. Yeah. So, and then obviously the imperial system of all the measurements is different. So just trying to understand what all those things are. But Marcus has been a great help. He's basically done what I'm doing now 15 years ago, you know. So he's sort of trying to tell me what to expect, what to be patient with, and what to try and achieve, you know, from the feelings I want to get from the car. But yeah, a lot of people have given me good advice, but until you get on the track and feel it yourself, you know, that's the biggest test.
What's the biggest thing that he told you that you're like, there's no way that that's like that? And then you experienced and you're like, oh, he was right.
Yeah, probably just that, you know, at Vegas on the weekend, the skew of the car and how it lands in the corner. he said it'll get away from you and all of a sudden you'll be three lanes up the track wondering how you got there. And that happened on the second lane of practice. I went into three and as it landed in the corner, it just felt like it was having a big slide, and I've overcorrected and ended up trying to not be in the fence. So it's, he told me all about it and sure enough it happened.
Had you ever been to Las Vegas?
Never been, no.
Did you find anywhere that was intriguing while you were there?
I kept my money in my pocket. Yeah.
No gambling?
No gambling, no.
Not at all?
Yeah, I just, you know, I'm there for racing and
yeah,
it's tempting, of course, but...
Yeah. It is very tempting. Yeah.
I behaved.
Yeah. So you grew up, how'd you start? Where did you start racing?
Yeah, so...
How did you wind up interested in racing? Was your dad interested or did you go to your dad and...
So dad was a rally driver, which is pretty cool. I've always been into rally. And but when I started racing, I was 7 or 8, my neighbors had quad bikes. So we got a quad bike and I started racing them. But also dad was racing sprint cars at Speedway. Western Springs was the main track. And I went there every week watching, and they had a kids class, and I started in the quarter midgets there on dirt. So yeah, came all the way through. That was... 1997, so a while now. And dad's race car was number 97, so that's where that comes from. And
awesome.
I've tried to keep that all my racing career. Just came through the ranks in New Zealand, went go-karting when I was 12 or 13, and then into single-seaters, and then supercars in 2007, and kind of did that ever since, yeah.
So the rally car piece of it, I've seen some
yep.
photos of you in the rally car.
Yeah, so I started rallying 2 years ago now.
My God, do you just want to challenge yourself with stuff that you just have no idea what you're doing and
yeah,
you just go for it?
I've been trying to do everything. So I did a lot of GT racing here in Europe, like 2016, 17, and then tried Speedway again the last couple of years and rally. And because we just don't race enough in Australia. Yeah. We do 12 or 13 weekends. So
on the supercar stuff.
Supercars, yeah. So I was always just trying to find other stuff to keep race fit. And yeah, rally was awesome. I got to compete in the World Rally Championship round in New Zealand too. So
wow,
it was epic to do
so,
that.
The question that I always had about rally racing was, how in the world do you know where you're going?
Yeah.
How do you prep?
Well, it's a lot of study, and then you get to recce the course, you know, two times. You get to drive over it slowly, and you have like a pace note system, and it's 1 to 8 of the corner radiuses. And I had you got a friend with you telling you where to go. Glenn Weston was my co-driver.
So you just use a friend.
Yeah, he was awesome, and he's done it for years, so yeah. He helped me out. But I pretend to listen to him, and away you go. But,
so do you have a pretty photographic memory? I mean, are you good at memorizing things?
I try not to in the rally.
Really?
Because otherwise you'll get to a corner and forget. So that's where you got to really trust the pace notes and commit.
No kidding.
So I'd always remember, I'd try and remember the tricky sections or what's over blind crests, but the rest of it I'd try and just drive to the notes.
So was most of that just on dirt, asphalt?
Pretty much always gravel.
Always yeah. gravel.
But you can't, like a stage was, if I convert it, it's like 15-mile stage. So 20 minutes of driving and there's probably over 1,000 corners on some of them. Like you can't remember all of them.
So yeah.
You got to trust your notes and just commit.
When you go and you do the rally stuff, does that make you, I mean, you obviously are willing to try pretty much anything in the world. Is that something that you think, okay, when I'm done with NASCAR, I could go back over and do that, or something that you would just go do for fun? Obviously, Red Bull is a big part of what you do. So, I mean, I would assume that you have the opportunities to go over and experience stuff like that.
I'd love to. I love the feeling of uncertainty and being unsure if you're going to be good at something and just getting outside the comfort zone. So that feeling of putting the helmet on, you know, like Atlanta qualifying was a pretty good example. It's a track that's flat out the whole way, but my first lap of the place was qualifying, you know.
Right.
So putting the helmet on, ready to go out, I had pretty big adrenaline going, just like, what's this going to be like? And, you know, going out and doing that lap, that feeling is something that I love doing, just not knowing how it's going to be, tipping into turn one there and trying to hold it flat
right.
the first time. Like, that's a cool feeling and I love doing that.
So does that carry over outside the car? Like skydiving?
Yeah, I don't know. It happens a lot. Like it's going to happen a lot this year. There's a lot of tracks I haven't been to and even in racing. So yeah.
But do you like to do extreme stuff like that as well?
No, not skydiving.
Nothing.
I've done it once and I'll never do it again.
Scared of heights?
Yeah, yeah.
For real?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Red Bull has all kind of that. Like, would you do the little Flutog thing where we build the little... the little vehicle and see how far it'll fly?
I'd be one of the judges on the side. Yeah.
You wouldn't ride it. Even no. If maybe we could get Josh and we can push him down the hill. And
yeah, he'd be good.
Let him try to fly the thing. But when you go and you look back at your supercar experience, that's obviously been very successful for you. Some of the things that are intriguing to me is the fact that you're here. Scott McLaughlin's here. Obviously, you guys raced head to head for several years. And just talk us through that relationship and how he wound up in IndyCars and you wind up here. Would you ever consider doing what he does at the Indy 500? Do you ever think that he might race here? Obviously, you guys, I would assume you guys talk.
Yeah, of course. We're friends again now that we're not competing, trying to beat each other every weekend. But man, we had an awesome time. Like, I think it was 2017 to 2020. We had some great races and he ended up winning 3 championships. He was awesome, like really, really good racer. And I'd love to try the Indy cars and try Indy 500 and stuff eventually. But what he's done, how he's come over, and I think it's his third season now about to start. He's going really well. So it's cool to follow his progress. And yeah, when I did the race here, Chicago last year, he was one of the most excited guys, blowing up my phone, asking me about it all. How was it? And, you know, with that tie in now with Penske and their NASCAR team, I think he's pretty tempted to try it. So
yeah,
it'd be cool to see how he'd go.
When you look at some of those races and some of those battles, I mean, there were a couple of them that were, that were pretty epic. And your favorite?
Man,
there has to be one that sticked out. That sticks out a little bit just because you guys had, I mean, there were just so many moments that were
probably
fun to watch.
Unfortunately, it was probably when I come second to him. I think
that's
it was
okay.
Bathurst 2019. We raced at the end and I was just really trying to be as close as I could to him. And like the laps we were doing were just quali laps, so close to the wall, just flat out the whole time. And coming second sucked, but like how on the limit we were pushing, it was a pretty cool feeling. But
when you go to Bathurst and it's just one of those untraditional places. And you like when I watch on TV, I look at it and I say, man, hope they don't go over the wall and wind up down the mountain. But you're talking about going rally car racing and doing all those things. What's the mystique and the intrigue of racing at a place like that? Because when I watch it here, I mean, it just looks intense and just the way that the track is laid out.
It's just like the Daytona 500 here, I guess, the mystique and the build-up around it. We have it 3/4 of the way through the season, I guess, so there's a bit of a build-up for it. We have an endurance race called the Sandown 500 first, where there's a dual driver race, and it sort of starts the anticipation for it. But
how many weeks? Obviously, it's
kind of two or three weeks after.
2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah. But when you get to Bathurst, it's 1,000 feet, basically, the top to the bottom. It's pretty steep, and it's like what I'm finding here, when you go to the ovals, you don't see the banking on TV until you get there. It's like that. When you're up the hill and down, it's amazing how steep and undulating it is. Like walking up, it's pretty hard to walk up, and then walking down, you're trying not to fall over. And what it does to the car when the wheels come off the ground and it unloads, it took me 2 or 3 years to be fully fast there. And then the way the race is, it took me a long time to be a factor every year. It's a really hard race to be good at.
Who was your go-to guy in the supercars? Like who helped you?
Not really. We don't really sort of do anything over there. Like there's no coaches, or everyone's sort of stuck together back then, or you stuck to themselves. So kind of had to be self-taught. And then 2019, I had Garth Tander. He retired and became my co-driver for the Enduros, and he taught me how to win that race. So
yeah,
2019 we raced together, and then 2020 and 2022 we won it together.
And I think culturally, like when I went to Europe, it was you against everybody in your tent, and it was always don't tell your teammate too much. You didn't cut your teammate any slack, and it's not like that here. I mean, there are moments where you have to race your teammate, but all the meetings are together. Yeah. Everything that you do in the sim is shared. Everything that you have on your data, everything is more open. In Australia and New Zealand, was it much of the European culture, or was it more like what you've experienced here?
At first it was. Now, especially at the team I was at the end, 888, everything was open. And the team worked much better together for it, and us as drivers. But at the start, you know, it was Stone Brothers. We had sort of 3 cars and we all sort of did our own thing, and you kept a lot within yourself. But yeah, it doesn't help lift the whole team up together. You got to beat everyone else before you focus on your own teammates and beating them, I guess. So yeah, the teamwork factor is really important.
Was there a lot of the same style of simulation and things that we have here, or was that not there yet?
Not there. That's blown me away here, especially with no practice, how much they rely on the sim here, and what you see or what you don't see behind the scenes here is whether it's the computer sim or the driving computer sim, it's unbelievable the level of technology here, which is a shame. It's kind of hidden, you know, the fan doesn't get to see it, but yeah, it's very, very impressive, the tech here.
Yeah, and I think when a lot of people, they watch an F1 race and they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe the technology and everything that's happening, and they're putting numbers and different things all over the place. And then people like you come in here for the first time and are blown away by the tech centers that all the manufacturers have, the war room that people have that are back watching the race and figuring out everything that's going on. And I tell people that, and you'll get a first timer to come over, whether it's a sponsor or somebody to come into the shop, and they'll look at the shops and they'll be like, well, we thought this would be like a 4-car garage with a couple of guys working
especially
on it.
Especially when you see an Xfinity car, the simple 4-speed gearbox and the way the diff and rear end is, but the science that's into that stuff, which you don't see, is, I'm still blown away by it.
Yeah, and I think that's probably one of the harder parts for people to get used to when they come over and have all this data available.
Yep.
And it's interesting to me to hear your comment to how much you use that data. Hmm. Is it something that you want to dive into, or do you try to keep it simple? And how do you use it?
I'm very data driven, so especially when we're in the cup car, the SMT. I spent hours trying to look at everyone else's stuff, especially when we got to Chicago, when there wasn't that much history. The Toyotas in particular had quite a different style in the first half of the track, and I'd catch them back up on the end. So I was trying to get better at the first half and understand. And it's I've never been in a series where you can see everyone else's data as well. Normally you just have yours and your teammates. So yeah, the way NASCAR does it in Cup, it's very basic driving data, but you're still getting everyone's is
there
rare.
Anything that stuck out from one particular guy?
No, not too much. Denny got me a lot under brakes. He was very good under brakes, but I was flowing the car a lot better, so which helped me in the last sector through the tricky stuff. But yeah, I got my braking a bit better for the race day.
When it rained and the track was wet, what was the comparison between what you used to race in these cars? What was the difference in how the car felt, or how you could use the power, things like that?
You really felt the weight of the car. So the car's, 300 kilos. Is that 600 pounds or something heavier than what I race?
Oh, I'm terrible at math.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to figure that out.
Yeah, I think it's about 600 pounds. But you could really feel the weight of the car. It didn't feel alive at all. Felt very dead and slippery on those tires. So it was the same for everyone, but the throttle control was ridiculous, what you needed. It was pretty tough while it was fully wet.
And the shifting part of it, has that been difficult? Right hand, left hand?
It's been hard now in the H pattern. Yeah, sequential's easy. My rally car was sequential, but the first at Daytona, the second or third shift going across the gate, I don't think I've ever used that muscle before. So shifting with the right hand on an H pattern's been difficult, but the sequential is easy.
So right now, the difficulty that you have is just shifting the H pattern.
Yeah.
And how about your neck? Has it been sore yet? I know you didn't do a lot of laps at Vegas, but I bet it was still...
Yeah, it was actually Atlanta the first time. I got 15 laps into the race. So it's going to hurt if I do this for 180 or whatever the race was. So I pretty quickly just let it rest on the outside. And now I've padded that up a bit. But Yeah.
I think as I go back to Chicago, and a lot was made out of how you drove the car, and you talk about those differences with the style and the things that you did, but the noticeable style, because you had a camera, was the fact that you used the clutch. And there's only a couple guys that I've seen in this country that use the clutch. And where did you, is that how you were taught to road race? Or I know the heel toe piece of it is pretty common, but the piece with the clutch to control the wheel spin and everything that happens there, that's not something that you see everybody do. So how did that develop?
When I first started racing in Formula V, you needed to heel toe. So the skills started there. But when we get into supercars, we had a solid rear end, locked, lock diff. Mm. So you had to run so much rear brake to make the car turn. So you'd always have a lot of rear locking. So under braking, I'd be on the clutch trying to take a bit of rear brake away. And it doesn't really do the same thing in these cars because you have the open diff. And I'm not sure what the Xfinity car will be like, but yeah, I just stuck with right foot braking because it's all I've ever known. And I hadn't really ever left foot braked until I got in the rally car and now again in the ovals. So yeah, the left foot braking is a new skill to me, but I think I'll stick with my right foot for the road courses. But the clutch is just an extra tool to take away rear brake, I guess. Yeah. So you can run a bit more rear brake to help the car turn.
I would definitely suggest that you don't change anything.
Yeah, I think I'll stick with
it. On the road courses. The only guy that I've ever seen, Bobby Labonte used to drive like you drive a streetcar. He would go from the gas to the brake with just his right foot. He would use his left foot to actually use the clutch, but he would never use his left foot to actually brake. So he would go from the gas pedal over to the brake pedal. So I'm always intrigued by how people learn, because it's just not a typical skill that you would see somebody develop.
Yeah,
I know a lot of work at it.
I saw how crazy everyone went about it here because I hadn't seen it for a while, I guess. But to me, it's just normal. That's all I've ever known.
Well, Marcus used to be super good at it, and Watkins Glen is really where Marcus Ambrose would stick out. And I tell people all the time, if Marcus had the quality of car that he needed, he'd still be here.
Yeah,
because he was just that good. But when we would go to Watkins Glen, there wasn't anybody even close to being able to do the things that he did. And one of the years that he won in the Xfinity car there, the motor was literally hanging in the car by one bolt. All the motor mounts were broke off of it, and still just
killing everyone.
Still just throttling forward because he had such a different technique, and that didn't really translate to Sonoma at the time because of how slick the racetrack was, and it was just a different style of racing. But the things that you guys can do under the braking with that technique,
well, Watkins is very similar to Phillip Island in Australia, and Ambrose, Marcus just used to kill everyone at Phillip Island. His style just is very good at the flowing tracks. And he's very impressive.
So who's the guy that you grew up idolizing?
It's Greg Murphy, which him and Marcus always butted heads.
Oh, really?
They had the big crash at Bathurst where you saw Marcus nearly go over the fence.
Yeah.
So, but Greg was the New Zealand, where I was from, the hero there. So always went for him.
And was he a guy that would race more than just the road racing stuff?
No, he'd only do
road racing.
Yeah.
And I think through the years, did you watch NASCAR racing?
I did a little bit, like in the, I think it was when Marcus first came over. And
But he's the only reason that you started watching.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I always went for Tony Stewart though. Sorry.
Okay.
But yeah, I was a big Tony Stewart fan. So working with Darian Grubb last year, that was a pretty cool moment for me.
Eye-opening.
Yeah. He had some cool stories.
I was going to say, he's definitely got some cool stories through all the things that they went through together.
Yeah.
But when you came to America and you said, okay, I'm going to do this, you obviously had to talk to Justin. And tell us how that conversation started. How did Justin reach out? Somebody else? How did you guys get connected? Because I think that is so intriguing.
Initially?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I obviously saw the Project 91 stuff last year or year before happening with Kimmy, and just thought, I asked Paul Morris if he knew anyone in the States to reach out. And he spoke to, I think, Dale and also Max Pappas to try and intro us. And yeah, Justin rang me, must have been the end of 22, and just said, yeah, if there's a chance we could race together, I think the Chicago Street Race will be a perfect place for it. And he said, give me a couple of months and I'll see if I can make it work. And yeah, he rung me early that year, and I think I was at the Australian Grand Prix when he gave me the go ahead and said, we're doing it. And yeah, I thought it would just be a one-off, but obviously it went pretty well. We came back a month or two later and did Indy. And yeah, I thought it'd be one more year in Australia. I just signed a one-year extension, but then things just snowballed, and it's been a crazy whirlwind. And the way Justin thinks and makes things happen is seriously impressive. Was he pushing that? He was, yeah. And I was all on board as well. You know, even my bosses in Australia, they said, you just got to get over there and make it happen. And I went from doing, I think it was going to be 10 Xfinity races at a team, and it would have been 3 cup races the first year, a lot of learning, and now it's full Xfinity and up to 8 cup, maybe some more. It's crazy how stuff snowballed and how it just keeps happening, and the way people have got on board and supported us. It's been amazing.
It's pretty wild to just see the brand grow. I mean, you were the most popular driver in the Supercar series.
Yeah.
And as you come over here and you look at the posts and just the response to the things that you do, would you say that coming to America and racing the Cup Series has grown your brand differently than what you did in Supercars, because you had already kind of grown to the popularity that series was going to grow to?
Yeah, like in Australia, people are very divided, you know, especially between Ford and Holden, it was at the time, now Chev. But now I remember doing that Chicago race and the amount of Ford fans that said, we don't cheer for you here and we won't again, but we love that Chicago race. And the amount of people watching, and even on the weekend at Vegas, that were Kiwis and Aussies in the stands and came and saw me in the pits. It was so cool. I couldn't believe, or I can't believe, the response and how much support I've got. It's so cool.
Well, it was a unique weekend in Vegas.
Yeah, the rugby league was there. The hotel was full of familiar accents. Yeah.
Yeah. And we spoke about that a little bit. So was that like the rugby or?
No, wrong rugby. Rugby league.
What's the difference?
Well, it's rugby league. It's more stop start, whereas union's a bit more messy, but full on.
That's the thing.
That's what I grew up watching.
You'll have to explain that to the Americans of proper rugby.
Well, it's like me watching an NFL game. I got no idea what's going on.
Did you watch a Super Bowl?
I tried, but then there was too many ads.
Yeah. Too many ads.
Yeah. So every 2 minutes there was an ad.
So a rugby game just...
Yeah, it's 40 minutes and it's full. Keeps going the whole time. Yeah.
Too many ads.
They stop it halfway. Yeah.
So you talk about the football games being different and the too many ads on TV. What else has been different? I heard you talk about the Talladega Nights and how that should have been a documentary,
you brought his house, haven't you? Well, Ricky Bobby's house.
You got to keep a good story rolling. So I think I think for us, like, I never watched Talladega Nights. Mm. I watched it one time, and I had the same reaction that Corey had. It's like, I'm kind of offended about that. I don't really know that I should watch that movie again. And now you realize it's a comedy and it's fun and you own the house, but you say it's a documentary.
It's just, you know, you see all the guys, everyone's got the family, the kids, and always wearing the big sponsor jackets, and everyone seems to just have a massive house. So.
Is there anything that, from a culture standpoint, from a food standpoint, the way that you drive, is there anything that you say, oh man, this is not really how I would envision it being?
It hasn't been one particular thing. Like, everything is subtly different, but the same. But the biggest thing is the attitude of people. Like, everyone's much more friendly, says hello at the supermarket and stuff like that. In Australia, everyone just keeps to themselves, does their own thing. Everyone's really friendly here. It's really cool.
So when you go to this, I mean, have people started to recognize you in Mooresville?
Nah. Or even if they do, they just say hello and carry on. Yeah.
Is that not the way it would be over there?
They just stare at you and look at you funny sometimes. Yeah. Which is, you know, you'd rather they just sit hello and carry on.
Yeah. So we were at the kart race in Italy, and Charles Leclerc, he came to the kart race and it was like a freaking mob scene.
Yeah. No, and it's not like that for us.
They were knocking the walls down. So it's more of a laid back.
Yeah.
More of a laid back culture.
More laid back.
Did you say you were at the F1 race?
When's that?
In at the Australian Grand Prix?
Yeah, we race there every year. So.
Oh, you race with them?
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Yeah, as a support category.
I gotcha. Yeah. Is that anything that you, do you follow F1?
I do a little bit, yeah. I was a big Max fan, so always watching that. But I haven't really watched it the last couple of years. Not much happening.
Do you guys have much interaction with the Red Bull stuff?
We do a bit. I'm on the same sim team as Max, so we race on the sim a little bit together.
Oh my God. Yeah. You're a sim racer too?
Not too much recently, but yeah.
So I get on the sim, and I'll be on there with the kids, and I'll be like 3 seconds off. And I don't know how you are with the sim, but I struggle because of the fact that I have to use my eyes. And when I have to use my eyes, things are...
I think that's an age thing.
Yeah. I think you're right. And I think my eyes have aged a little bit more than probably what most eyes have aged. I had the LASIK surgery. I got glasses, and I would literally lay in in the motorhome, and I would shut the shades if it was a night race. I would shut the shades, and I would not go outside unless I had to go outside and do an appearance, because as soon as my eyes would, the light would change, my eyes won't change back. So I literally would lay in the dark, or I'd open the shades in the motorhome, and I'd get the sunlight in my eyes as soon as the sun would come up in the
Glad
morning.
Glad I'm not at your age then, yet.
Yeah. How old are you?
34 now.
And now we're going to mark this down, because at some points your eyes are going to change a tremendous amount, but it's
difficult in those day night races now. Like Atlanta was the first one.
See?
Like, I'd never really done that before. So
running,
I had a tinted tear off, had to take that off. And then, the way the perceptions of the corners is pretty different. It's challenging.
So you come into, you came last year and ran IRP. You're going to go to Phoenix and it's going to be the same, but different. You're going to be in a truck and you get 20 minutes of practice.
Yeah.
Is it all sim this week? Is it a lot of studying? Who and what have you studied this week in order to get ready for Phoenix?
Yeah, actually watched last night Cole Custer's on board from the race there last year.
Okay.
And how he drives and just the way he explores the track. That's probably the biggest difference to circuit racing. You're trying to be in a rhythm, same line every lap, be consistent. It seems so variable here, and the fast line always changes and the track migrates so much. That's the biggest thing. And the way the corners being different, you see a map of Vegas on a map, it looks like both corners are the same. They're completely different. So every track I go to, it's eye-opening so far.
So when you go to Coda in a few weeks, you're going to run both vehicles, Cup car and the Xfinity car. Mm. And obviously you have to have that circled on your calendar. Have you run anything at Coda?
I've done some laps there, and I actually raced there 10 years ago in a supercar.
We did
half the track, but I've struggled on the sim there, to be honest, with the track limits. Mm. Normally we're trying everything we can to stay within the lines. In NASCAR, they're off the track more than they're on it, except for the S's is their only part they police. The rest of it seems like everyone just takes the piss and cuts all the corners, goes out wide. So it's taken me a lot of adjusting to get to mid-corner and just gas it up and aim off the track. I've spent all my life trying to stay on it, and it's very different the way the rules are, but looks pretty fun.
So over there, four tires outside of the curb or outside of the line, penalty.
You lose everything.
It's just like
F1. Yeah, so you got to have two wheels on the track, which is within the white lines. But I think it's two wheels on the curb at Coda, and
basically,
then the rest of it is...
Basically, if you don't cut the middle of the corner, you're good. On the exit, if it's paved, use it.
And
the dirt too.
Yeah, I've seen like the track ends up just covered in offline. It'll be pretty difficult. It's the way the racing is looks crazy. And that first corner, how everyone just fans out and uses each other as a break. It looks interesting.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you taking the time today. It's fun to hear your story. And I think when you hear how people wind up in NASCAR at this level, I don't think there's anybody that I can look at and say, he took a bigger chance. I don't think anybody took a bigger chance than what you did. You were perfectly successful at what you do, what you were doing in Australia with the supercars, and you come over here and I heard Chase Elliott say it a few years ago while he was at the Chili Bowl. He's like, I can't be afraid to step outside of my comfort zone, because if I don't, I'll never know if I can be good at something else. And so I commend you
for
doing what you're doing.
And I
love the fact that you have connected with Justin, because I think that anybody who's going to do something unique in our sport and step outside of that box, it's going to be Justin. So good luck.
Thank you.
We appreciate you coming on the show, and we appreciate everybody watching today. Hope you enjoyed the interview here on Kevin Harvick's Happy Hour, and you can follow us anywhere at Harvick Happy Pod. Thanks for watching.